people who come on the Sniff Perfume podcast are people who have founded brands. Fewer people come on who have refounded them. But that's exactly how our guest today describes himself, a refounder. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast Vikan Arslanian from Commodity Fragrances. Hi, Vikan.
Good morning, or I should say good afternoon.
So, Vikan, you refounded Commodity. Should we start with you telling us how that came about and what exactly, for you at least, refounding means?
Yeah, for sure. I'll tell the quick 10-second story. So Commodity was originally founded on a Kickstarter campaign back in 2013. So it was one of the first digitally native, try-at-home kind of modern brands to be born on in the digital world, actually. From there, it was, you know, highly successful. It got its funding on Kickstarter, went into Sephora. It actually did so well that it was kind of a victim of its success, and it shut its doors in 2019. And I had this opportunity to buy the brand. You know, they came to us saying, hey, would you like it? We're in the business. I can give you a history of that, but we're in the business. They came to us and I snatched it up because I really liked the brand. I'd really followed it. And then as I was rebooting, I'm like, well, what do I call myself? I'm not really a CEO. I'm not a suit and tie guy. I'm not the founder. I guess I'm a refounder. So that's how that name stuck. You know, I'm 2.0.
And what was it specifically about Commodity that appealed and made you think, yeah, this brand is worth saving?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So we're distributors of artistic and niche perfumery in America, right? So we represent 30 brands. We've been doing it for about 15 years. We're one of the, let's say, pioneers or one of the few that started this category. And in the artistic and niche perfumery world, the brands we represent are often quite opulent, right? Lots of ornate and gold and exotic ingredients. And each brand that we represented was even more ornate than the other, more gold and more crystal, and like really quite exclusive, actually. And I always said that the word exclusive, while sounding great, you know, has this root in it, which is it excludes people. And these niche brands were excluding a whole kind of array of people that just couldn't afford it or just not, you know, connecting with it. And so Commodity came along and was this 180 degree opposite brand of what we're doing. Simple names, elemental design, accessible price point. And, you know, I always say I was a bit jealous of it. I always kept my eye, like the corner of my eye, on the brand as I would pass the store. So yeah, it's like, you know, you marry your opposite personality, right? That's kind of the idea. So when I saw this brand that was the opposite of what we're doing, I had to, you know, get into it.
That's really cool. And has it continued to meet your expectations then once you kind of got under the hood of it? Or has the smoke screen been shattered now it's actually your brand?
So this is not my first time owning a brand. I had actually created a brand 20 years ago. And I lost my shirt. I lost tons of money. I lost not just my shirt, my pants, and everything else that came with it. So it was really difficult. So this time around, not that there wasn't any problems, I was just a bit more prepared for it. So I wasn't as shocked and I wasn't as surprised. But yes, you know, under the hood could be nothing, no engine, but then, okay, you rebuild it. And so, yes, all those things happen. At the end of the day, I'm extremely happy of the decision. It's transformed my company, my future, just my outlook on my business. It's been wild and it's been great, actually.
Brilliant. And we're going to circle back to that in a minute.
Sure.
But I wonder, when you were starting the brand up again, how did you decide which elements of the brand from the past to keep and which to change? Because I sort of imagine there was perhaps a tension between making it work better, making it like have a long-term viability, but retaining that original identity and the thing that had drawn you in the first place?
You know, I can answer that question in two ways. One is from a design point of view and a product point of view, and the other one is from an olfactive point of view. So from a design point of view, we were really conscious of not alienating the kind of historic and the first clients of Commodity. And it was important for us to maintain some identity of the past while putting our touch, our DNA, into the future of the brand. And we did that, you know, in various ways. And its scent space is one of the big things that we did. And we can talk about that. But then from an olfactive point of view, I hate to say it this way, but I didn't really care about the past. So the first thing we did actually was we created a docuseries, which documented by video how we were rebooting the brand. I knew it was going to take about a year, so we said let's kind of keep everybody engaged and come with us on this journey. So if you look at our docuseries, there's an episode called The Chopping Block. And so on The Chopping Block, it's when me and some of our senior members of our team here got together and we did like a speed dating of fragrance. So we took all the fragrances of Commodity and we did a quick sniff test and we said yay or nay. It was literally like that. No deep, you know, market study, no focus groups. Do we love it? Do we hate it? Like that. And, you know, we got some hate for what we chopped, but the first thing we did is we got rid of the fragrances. They weren't bad. They're fragrances that we considered that people can get in other brands as well. So if you think about bergamot as an ingredient, I love bergamot. I wear, you know, a bergamot type fragrance, but you know, there's lots of great bergamots. And so we really wanted to have distinct fragrances. So we chopped everything that was not distinct and we kept the distinct. Mm. That was kind of our starting point.
Yeah. I love your honesty about that as well. I think that's really, it's really nice to hear. And of course, one thing that longtime fans of the brand always want to know, and it's one of the questions I see popping up on social media a lot around the brand is, did you reformulate?
We did not reformulate, all right, in between brackets. So no, we did not reformulate the existing fragrances. There's two things that we did, again, for full transparency. Tastes in fragrance have changed in the last 10 years, actually. And if you, I'm sure you're part of perfume talk and, you know, you look at social media and you see how I think consumers are really looking for longevity, projection, performance. Performance was a word never used before in fragrance, actually. It was always about marketing and horses and whatever and that kind of stuff, right? And so the one thing we did was we increased the concentration of gold, which was the best-selling fragrance. And I'm very open about this, and most companies don't tell you, but we increased it from 15% to 18% just to give it a little bit more kick. And the other thing we did, which the whole world did, is there's certain ingredients that are banned, like Lilium. And so there's certain ingredients that the European Union or IFRA and so on bans, but we all go through that. You know, at one point, I think oak moss was a problem and so on and so forth. But no, we did not reformulate the existing expressive original Commodity fragrances. They're as is. Same manufacturer, same perfumer, same everything.
And in terms of the public response to bringing the brand back, was the loyalty still there? Are people happy that you've brought it back? Because I see a lot of positivity around it.
I have to tell you something. So when we launched the docuseries and then everything else we do, first of all, I didn't know how people react to our scent-based concept, about the new packaging, about some of the new fragrances. But more important, even me, you know, everyone always gets, oh, I like this guy or I hate this guy. This guy sounds like an idiot or whatever. And what's interesting is that I don't think there was a single, and I always ask my team, I'm like, guys, are you guys deleting the negative comments? Am I not seeing them? Are you trying to be polite? But honestly, there is no negative comment on Commodity. And I say it not as the owner of the Commodity community. I'm now finally, I can say finally now I own Commodity. But for a couple of years, I was a guest, you know, a guest caretaker for the first year. That's how I felt. It wasn't my community, right? I bought it, actually. And so I couldn't believe it. And, you know, just to give an example, we raised our prices last year and our team kind of sent out a message about why we're raising it, why we need to raise the prices and so on and so forth. We had like 96 positive comments. There was one that was like, boo. And that was about it. It wasn't anything more than like a boo, but 96 positive comments. And so I'm glad you noticed it because we notice it. And I can't pat myself on the back. It's an amazing community that I hope they stay that positive.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we grow.
Yeah. And so we've touched on this a couple of times now, but let's delve into Scentspace. So basically, as I understand it, Scentspace is the same approximate scent done in three different power levels, so to speak. So a quiet version for people who want to keep the scent to themselves, a medium version, and then a louder version. And they're called personal, expressive, and bold in that order. Why did you decide to do that with fragrance?
Great question. And so the quick answer is this. It's a convergence of 20 years of, let's say, not almost experience, but 20 years of being in the business and seeing things. Like, so what's one of the things I saw? One of the things I saw was when you travel to the Middle East, everyone says, oh, Middle East, they like, you know, rose and oud and this kind of fragrance. And then if you travel to Asia, they like pink and light and so on. And America likes fruity florals. And it's all BS, I hate to say it that way. Because if you look at fragrance, if you look at, you know, Baccarat Rouge, it's the same successful fragrance everywhere in the world. If you look at Aventus, it's the same. If you look at CK1, if you look at J'adore, there is no, you know, there is no J'adore for the Middle East. It's the same fragrance. So my thesis was that people were confusing scent profile to strength and projection. It's true in the Middle East, they like more. I go to the Middle East. I have a business there. When I go there, I want to spray myself 20 times. I would never dare spray myself 20 times here. I barely put half a spray here, right? In New York. And so I realized that there was a real desire to control the strength and projection of your fragrance. And secondly, and to that effect, I mean, similarly, there are some people that love a particular scent profile, but because it's too strong, they can't use it. So they have to jump to a totally different fragrance. And so we thought, and then one more thing, by the way, to add to it, was that all these discussions about eau de toilette, eau de parfum, parfum was getting a bit confusing because perfumery levels went up in terms of, you know, today what concentrations are actually being used. And then there was unusual names popping up like Parfum de Toilette or Cologne Intense or Extrate Forte. There's like 100 different words. And how is anybody supposed to really know this? And so to go along with the elemental nature of commodity, we said, let's get rid of all these names. Let's make it very easy to understand, personal, expressive, and bold. So expressive is what we consider the most balanced and, you know, let's say perfect or middle of the road, but perfect projection and longevity. Personal is a skin scent that's meant to be close to your skin, but last a long time. And bold is meant to be bold and strong and project as far as possible. So we decided to take each of our fragrances and give it those two alter egos. And they're actually not just different concentrations, but they're also different formulas. And what the most interesting part of this is that people still want to, you know, they look at me like, wink, wink, tell me what this really is. Is this an eau de parfum? No, like, they really want to know. They can't get away from the terminology. And so I'm not trying to be a marketing gimmick. So I'll reveal some things about concentration. And so traditionally, if our eau de, let's say, middle one is eau de parfum, that would be 15 or 18%, right? The eau de toilette, the lighter one, would have been 10 to 12%, and the parfum would be 20 to 25%. In our case, our personal fragrances, remember, the personal ones are the lighter ones, are 22%. They're higher than the expressive ones because the formulation is a different formulation, but we still want it to last a long time. We're not saying it's got to be light and fleeting. It just has to be, if you want only your partner to smell you, or you're a nurse and you don't want, you know, you want to smell yourself, but you don't want your patient or whatever. You know, there's a million reasons why you don't want people to smell you in an office and whatnot. So our personal fragrances are higher concentration than our expressive ones in the middle, but our expressive ones seem stronger and project more. So we really did away with this kind of concept. And so now we give choices. And you know, the last thing I can say is that people think they're something, meaning they think they're personal type of a fragrance, but then they gravitate towards the bold, or they're bold and they go to the personal, or they mix. And it's been a really, really fascinating experiment, actually.
Yeah. And so one of the things that intrigues me about it is, do you find that one of the three levels consistently sells better than the other two, or is it mixed? Is it sales, you know, equal across the board?
So before I answer that, it's important to know that we started out as a direct-to-consumer brand. And we started out with a client base that knows the historic fragrances. And so out of our six fragrances, four are from the previous commodity and two are basically new. And those six come in three, so it's 18. But let's just talk about six scent profiles, right? Book, gold, velvet, moss, paper, and milk. So out of the four, people already knew the expressive one. And so because we didn't have a retail store where people can try different things, and already people knew the original ones, our expressive collection is, of course, 50% of our sales. But if you look, and we have a really robust discovery process online, you can buy a discovery kit, you can smell everything online and really try it at home. And now that we're in Sephora and in other retail stores, in Europe, first of all, the bold collection is starting to outweigh the expressive really fast. The personal is still, you know, the third in line, but building. And so I'm not surprised. My prediction is that in a year or two, the bold and the expressives will be neck to neck in terms of sales.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you. Knowing what you know now, having gone through this whole journey with Commodity, is there anything that you would have done differently?
I'm thinking, for those of you who can't see my face, I'm looking up and to the left. What would I do differently? Not really. So what do I think I didn't do right? Let's talk about that. So number one, there's always packaging issues. You know, we tried to make it modern. The label sometimes gets fingerprints or whatever. And, you know, I would have taken more time and done it properly, but those are just minor things. But I wouldn't have changed the speed at which I went to the market. So I'm okay with that mistake. I apologize for fingerprints, but we'll solve it and we'll get past it and we're already resolving it. What I would do, if you want to know the real answer, is we developed the sense-based concept during COVID. So remember, I have a business, I have a life, I buy a new brand, and the world is coming to an end. Basically, we don't know what's happening. Let's put it to you that way. And I have to feel creative and design a whole slew of 12 fragrances. And so when we did the sense-based concept, the only thing I would do differently is I would focus even more on the performance. So I can say that out of our 18 fragrances, I don't know, maybe 12 really do the job of, you know, light, medium, and dark. So I can say, well, maybe Milk Minus is a bit too strong. Maybe I would go down a little bit. Maybe the other one needs to go a little bit more and project more and really be more. And so I think there's a little, you know, tweaks and things that I could do there. But in terms of strategy and no, I think everything else I'm happy with. But honestly, I would probably spend a little bit more time in making the sense-based concept. When you smell it immediately, completely apparent that this is A, B, C. That's probably what I would do differently.
Which commodity fragrance do you wear the most?
So there's two that I love. Velvet is my favorite fragrance. It's our least seller, which is okay for me to say. It's always good to know. I love Velvet. I just love everything about it. It's got a lot of personality. It's deep. It's dark. It's rose and almond and roasted almond. It's just a dark, nice, you know, beautiful fragrance, completely unisex. And I happen to love Paper Bold. It's a overdose of sandalwood. I can't get enough of it. Actually, that's one that I want to work on because I like it so much, but it doesn't last on me as long as I want it to last. So I love that so much that I want it to last longer. My favorite experimental fragrance is Milk because I think it's unusual. It's a huge success. It's overload of certain ingredients that really hasn't really been, not that it hasn't been used in perfumery, but we've overloaded certain ingredients and we're happy we did that because it's a massive success. But I'd love to see Velvet rise in the ranks if I can.
So listeners, perhaps that's a challenge to you. Go out and try Velvet and then come back and tell us what you think.
Try it at least.
Yeah. So, Vikram, where do you want to take the brand next? What's next for Commodity? And where would you like to see the brand in 5 years' time?
Do I have to lie down on a couch to answer this question? Do I have to be horizontal? And no. So where do I see it next? Next is we're opening a store in New York on Crosby Street. So this is a big deal for us because we're a direct-to-consumer brand primarily. We are in Sephora in the US and in UK. But there's nowhere for a consumer or anyone to experience the whole brand, the whole DNA, packaging, smell, visuals, box, bottle, everything. And so our store, which is going to be hopefully beautiful, on Crosby Street is really, really, really important for us. Where do I want to see it after that? What's important for me, you know, we're not really guided by revenue or increasing revenue. What I love is the fact that we were able to create something called SenseSpace. We were completely unsure of its acceptability or anxiety, and had anxiety, just like the first day of school type of thing. And people liked it and they commented about it and so on. And I love this connection to our customers. And it's quite intentional. You know, we have our own websites around the world and we've done that intentionally. So I'd love to be in a place where I can create beautiful spaces like our store in New York, but also elsewhere in London, Paris, and so on, where we can have a slow growth. That's really critical. So slow growth with coming up with new fragrances, some that are going to be great and some that are going to probably stink, and just be okay with that process and keep refining. I think that would be an ideal scenario in 5 years.
Mm. Yeah, fingers crossed we see you get there as well. And so more generally, where do you think the trends for perfume are going? And do you think it's going to become more or a more or a less important part of our lives in the future?
I mean, I don't know how it could be more. There's so much fragrance consumption around the world. It's really quite amazing. I think certain countries are getting deeper into it. You know, from what I read, I'm not in China, but from what I read, the China market is getting more open to more artistic and artisanal fragrances, where they're more traditionally into citrus and kind of lighter fragrances. The US market, without question, has, again, I'm speaking about my sphere, by the way. My sphere is this kind of artistic perfumery and less about the commercial celebrity brands. I think we'll see less. Right now, there's a lot of brands popping up. Tons of brands are popping up. I think, you know, if you kind of pay attention to the answer to my last question, this idea of slow growth, I always talk about slow growth. So I think in any business, in any category, building a brand should be primary and not building a product. So where I think it's going is right now, there's a lot of runway. There's a lot of room, lots of room for brands. People are loving these fragrances. I would have never predicted that the world is going to, you know, embrace beast mode fragrances that are projecting, you know, 50 feet or 50 meters or however long it projects. I don't know if it'll take a step back from there, but for the foreseeable future, it seems like the love of perfume is was amplified during COVID of all times, actually. And I'm happy that it's there.
Yeah. On that note, do you think the market is moving too quickly in that, you know, I think we see at one point there was sort of something like 2,500 releases a year. And now it's something like, I think I read a figure that's something upwards of 10,000 releases a year. Is that too many? Is the appetite there? You know, does the market need to slow down?
I mean, whether we think it should slow down or it shouldn't slow down, it's going to do what it does probably, right? I mean, it's got a life of its own. I would say the big difference between, I assume you're referring to the times when the world was dominated by the multinationals, right? Calvin Klein or whatever, Estee Lauder, LVMH, and so on. I think what's changed today is the digital world has allowed, just like in music, by the way, it's allowed smaller brands to reach a subsector of the community. I mean, actually, it made no sense that so many of us should be wearing, I mean, I hate to just pick something, but Eternity. Really? Like a billion people should be liking that one fragrance? I think that's more unusual than maybe 10,000 is not enough. I mean, maybe it should be, how many shirts, how many types of t-shirts are there in the world or shoes or clothing? So maybe it should be 20,000. And that's actually the beauty of it. And I think that's the main difference with artistic perfumery. It's the idea that I can make something. I feel like making something that smells like mint and grapes. And, you know, if I find the people that like it, they like it. Mm. And I think that's a real liberating phenomenon that the digital world has allowed to exist and flourish.
Are there any common misconceptions about working in the fragrance industry that you hear from people that you would like to take this opportunity to correct?
Misconceptions. I mean, from a consumer point of view, I would say the biggest thing is this, you know, this is fake, it's watered down, you know, there's all those kind of things, right? When someone changes a package, they assume everything else has changed as well. Or when they see something maybe discounted on the side, like, oh, this is a watered down version. Technically speaking, probably, unless it's actually counterfeit, it's not. It's the same thing. You know, when you smell alcohol, you're not smelling alcohol. You're smelling the fragrance as it's supposed to be. So that's one. From a business point of view, I mean, what can I say? The misconception. If people have a conception that it's or conceive that there's tons of money in it, it's true and it's not true. It's a lot of hard work. There's gold at the end of the rainbow. But that's a pretty, pretty long rainbow.
That's a great answer. Thank you. And finally, from my sensible questions, and this might be a really hard question to answer, but on a very personal level, what does fragrance mean to you?
I think it's the same for everybody. I mean, there's no, and I'm curious to know if you ask this question to others, it's intimately linked with memory, honestly. I mean, I can tell you when I smell pepper, like a green pepper, a cooked green pepper. I remember the pizza I used to have when I was 7 years old with my family at the pool, you know, wherever we used to be together in the summer. And so till today, and I'm 50 today, that smell of a cooked green pepper conjures up poolside memories splashing around when I was 7 years old. And so if you ask people, they're going to tell you they remember their mother, their grandmother, their vacation or whatever it is. And so I think there's that. Okay. And there's something else, you know, so I'm Armenian and we can have a whole other podcast about this, but being Armenian or being in certain ethnicities actually gives, you know, I always say, I say in my community, being Armenian gives me this kind of invisible armor. It's really hard to understand unless you're, you know, part of a particular community. And why? I don't know. Just the way I was brought up. Just certain upbringing things, ethics and whatever, I feel like things can bounce off of me. I can absorb them. I have ways of dealing with them. And so just like me being Armenian, and I'm a very proud American Armenian as well, fragrance is also some type of I can say armor. So when you put it on, it provides a certain level, whether it's confidence, whether it's happiness, or it's some people now wear it to sleep. So it's a relaxant, if that's a word. But I can say most importantly, it's that confidence armor that it puts on. I love putting it on. I love putting on Paper Plus. Like it's a ritual for me because I actually don't wear fragrance every day. I have to smell fragrances throughout the day. So I can't really wear them. So when I put it on, it's that ritual, you know, I put on my jacket, I put on my whatever, and then I spray it on. I'm like ready to go on. It's that final thing. And so it's invisible. And so they're both intangible and it means something different. But I think if I assume you probably get a similar answer from everybody, if you ask the same question, I think it's pretty universal.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you. So that's the end of my sensible, that sort of thing, focus questions. So now we've got the quick fire questions.
Let's hear it.
So yeah, no right or wrong answer, just whatever pops into your head. What's your favorite smell?
It's called manta. It's a food. It's an Armenian dish of food. You didn't say it's perfumery smell, correct? You were saying general smell.
General smell, yeah.
General smell. Manta is a very, very traditional Armenian dish that you run for when mom cooks it.
What smells do you dislike?
Oh, easy. Traditional white florals. I can't do it. I can't do it.
That's
really bad. Really bad. Really bad.
Yeah, they're sort of like lily ones, those.
Yeah. Something's wrong. I think I'm allergic. Something, it's like opposite magnets. I can't do it. The white florals, I can't do.
Yeah. If you could go anywhere and smell anything from any point in history, where would you go and what would you smell?
Oh, that's such a great question. I would go back. I don't know the dates, right? But I would go back to when bathing wasn't a thing, like showering. You know, when I watch, I want to go further back than Downton Abbey or whatever. You know, I'm going back like hundreds of years. And I watch these period shows and I just wonder how awful the smell must be, right? So the creation of perfume was to mask those smells. Really, that's what it was. So I'm so curious. this horrible non-showering smell of a couple of weeks and wearing all this clothes on top of it, right? There are layers and layers of clothes. Then added to these like jasmines and whatever, I'm so curious what that smells like.
Yeah, I bet it's really pretty pungent.
It's a pretty interesting smell.
Yeah. What do you think fear smells like?
Oh, I don't know. Sweat, body odor, sweating.
What smell transports you to a strong olfactive memory and where does it take you?
I answered that. It's the pepper, believe it or not. The pepper, it's immediately back to my 7-year-old poolside pizzas. I don't know how to explain it. That's what it is.
Yeah. Have you got fragrance on right now?
I do.
And what are you wearing?
I'm wearing our next release for Commodity.
Ooh, how exciting. Mm-hmm. Without giving anything away that you don't want to give away, can you give us any teasers about it?
I cannot. All I'll say is you'll understand this when it comes out. It's a great juice.
Super. I love it.
That's all I can say. And it'll, you know, rewind it when it comes out.
Yeah, brilliant. What does summer smell of to you?
Oh, cut grass, mountains, wood. I have a mountain house. All the smells of the mountain and chopped wood and chopped grass.
What smell reminds you of school?
Wow. I have to pass on that. I don't have one. I went to school in Kuwait when I was a kid. Then I went to school in America. I don't have one. I don't want to make something up. I don't have one.
Okay, fair enough. And if scientists were to invent a smellophone, who would you ring first?
Wait. Wait, ask that again. What's a smellophone?
So if scientists were able to invent a smellophone where whatever you had at this end, you know, whoever you were calling could smell at the other end, who would you ring?
That I can smell them or they're going to smell me?
Either way, yeah, it works both ways.
Oh, yeah. I'd call, like, I don't know, Napoleon or something. I want to see what they smell like.
And if people want to know more about your brand, what's your web address and social media handles?
Commodityfragrances.com. It'll redirect you to your local websites. Especially go to the videos. You know, we have a video section. It shows us. It shows me, our team, how we make fragrance, how our warehouse looks. It's really quite fascinating, our docuseries. So that's a great resource for everything Commodity, commodityfragrances.com.
Brilliant. Well, this has been just such an enlightening chat, Vic, and I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
The Sniff Perfume Podcast is written and produced by me, Nicola Thomas, with music by Phil Collingwood. You can find all our reviews online at the-sniff.com. We're also on Instagram at the Sniff website or Twitter, now X, with the same handle. If you'd like to support our work, please find me on Buy Me A Coffee. The web address is buymeacoffee.com/thesniff. Our guest today was Vikan Arslanian from US-based Commodity Fragrances. We weren't paid in cash or in kind to feature this brand. Thanks very much for listening.